This is Mark Steiner, and we are broadcasting an interview today that you'll be hearing on these podcasts and on the radio. We're in Denver at the American National Convention at the Tattered Bookstore, which is a wonderful little bookstore here in Denver, Colorado. And we are talking with two men who have very different ideas about Democrats and what's going to happen in the South. We are joined by Tom Schaller, who's been a guest on our show many times, whose book was Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South, and Bob Moser, who wrote Blue Dixie, Awakening the Southern South's Democratic Majority. And Bob and Tom, good to have you both in the same place at the same time. It's like live on Slate, except it's here on the air. So this has really been a big bone of contention about what could happen in the South and whether or not it's possible for progressives, Democrats, to organize and really make the South move. I mean, people tried it in the 30s with disastrous results, but people think that you can make this bridge between, because of the economy, between working class whites in the South and blacks. And you very much, Bob Moser, think it's possible, and Tom does not. Let's start with Bob.
Well, I think it's possible in part because of the changes in the South. Demographically, the South is changing dramatically with the remigration of African Americans from back north, from the large migration of northerners coming south over the last couple of decades, and also the largest fastest growing Hispanic population in the country. And I think that some of the issues that Democrats have struggled with quite a bit for the last 40 years are going to be alleviated by that over time. And we're already seeing that in states like Virginia, Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, and to a degree, Texas.
Tom?
Well, first of all, let me say there's a lot to recommend about Bob's book, and Bob and I have debated before, and you know, he's a good writer. He's got a good, strong narrative in the book, and a keen eye for the anecdote that really brings his arguments to life. I think what really most impressed me about this, and I got a whiff of this when we debated at Wake Forest about, I guess, a little over a year ago, is he's making a very aggressive argument. The traditional argument for how you win back the South is that you DLC it, you Democratic Leadership Council, centrism, you know, Bill Clinton, you know, execute Ricky Ray Rector, do what you have to do to clear the social and cultural hurdles. You sort of sneak in a little bit of economic populism in behind, but you do the cultural two-step. And even though I am ideologically disinclined toward that approach, and I'm more inclined toward the economic populist approach that Bob is advocating, I think it's a gutsy argument to take it that way, and I think I would actually like Bob to be right. I we've had a couple of online debates. I just don't have that much faith that economic populism can trump the social and cultural hurdles in the South. And as I talk about in my book, and we can come back to it, there are just too many social and cultural issues that you have to get past in order to get your economic populist message to work. You know, the South is one of the poorest regions of the country, and some of the poorest whites, not just blacks, live in that area, and if economic populism was such a powerful draw, it would already be a Democratic region. And the reason it isn't is because of this. And so I think Bob is making an extraordinarily gutsy argument, precisely because it's counter to the conventional wisdom of how you win the South back.
And Bob, let's follow up on the particular point that Tom Schaller just said. And the thing that has always destroyed populist movements in American history, from Tom Watson's time on, has been race. When I was a young man down south and helping to organize woodworkers in Mississippi and Alabama, the thing that destroyed the union was white and black workers divided until we organized their wives, and then the union came together. But race is a powerful tool in all of this, and which is the impediment to creating a Democratic majority in the South. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, race certainly has been the dividing factor in Southern politics, and I wouldn't want to try to poo-poo that at all, and I think it will continue to be. I think that, though, when you look at the declining influence over time of white voters in the South and with the rising population of Hispanics, you see a different kind of racial dynamic that is emerging in the South. And you also see very different racial attitudes from younger Southerners, especially Southerners under 45 and under 30. When you look at that and you think about the fact that a lot of the racial attitudes that have really hurt Democrats in the South and helped Republicans have stemmed from the 60s and the culture wars that resulted. And the generation, that generation is dying and the generation replacing it is slightly more progressive on social issues, not progressive, but slightly more. And they are also supportive of good government in general. And I think that I think there is a way, but Democrats have to engage the South. They have to get in there and avoid having new racial divisions because of the Hispanic population now.
Tom, what about the same dynamic you see in the rest of the country, which I think what Bob Moser was just alluding to, which is the younger generation has a very different attitude about race and about social values and the older generation. You see that shifting because with the whole Obama mania in America, and that feeds into that. And most of the young people I've interviewed here from the South or North of the West feel that they have a very separate set of racial attitudes from people of my generation. Now, what about that factor in terms of changing what could happen in the South?
Well, I mean, Bob is right about that. I mean, if he makes the gutsy argument, which is the economic populist, more left argument, for the solution, he also doesn't do the second thing that I find to be the lazy argument against my non-Southern strategy, which is to say, well, this race is overblown, and you know, I have some black friends at work kind of argument, and Bob doesn't put a, you know, fresh coat of paint on it and just paper over that, and I think that's to his credit, because it is a very real thing, and at the same time, he's also right. I mean, the next generation of Southerners, whether they've moved into the region because they've, as he pointed out earlier, are new to the region, or whether they're just different from their parents and grandparents who have been multi-generational Southerners, they are more progressive. The one thing I would say, and Bob I think knows this, is that white Southern young people are still more conservative than young white people in other parts of the country. Does it mean they're getting more progressive, and are their attitudes different on race than their parents and grandparents? Of course they are, but they're still also different from their age cohorts in other parts of the country. And so with that caveat, other than that, and I think it's a very important caveat, I do think he's right about that. And so, you know, Bob and I have talked about this, but both in public and offline, just sort of emailing each other. And I always say to Bob, like, I would like him to be right in about 2 months, because that's when the election is. I just think I think his forecast is going to be right closer to two decades or somewhere in between there and then. And we may disagree about the degree of acceleration of when the South is going to look like the way Bob forecasts it and when it's going to look like, which I agree with, and I may say it's going to take a little bit longer. And so that's really the crux of the disagreement.
Let's talk through about what is Democrat in the South, and if things are changing, the public perception, because of some of the things that have happened, the races that are taking place in Georgia and Mississippi and Louisiana, where people actually won, white Democrats have won in a previously Republican-held territories. And we'll get to Jim Webb later, which is he's the heart of the economic populist argument in this country in many ways. Also a former Republican, I might add. So what about that? Let's talk about your perspective on that first, Bob Moser, and then go to Tom Schaller about what these men represent, and women who are doing this running. They don't seem to be progressive, but they're winning.
Well, I think that in many ways, the people who have won have not been particularly progressive. We did have a very progressive congressman breakthrough in Louisville, Kentucky, sort of in the border South, John Yarmuth. But the arguments that have won, the basic approach for these guys, and Heath Shuler, the congressman in North Carolina, kind of exemplified this, is to basically neutralize, it's the same old formula, neutralize the social issues, say you're pro-life or pro-gun, whatever. But then I think one thing that we have seen is more of an emphasis on good government, on government regulation, especially on environmentalism. And environmentalism being one of the issues that younger evangelical voters, who are also at least to some degree, going to be a swing vote in the future, many of them registering independent and a little tired of the reputation of intolerance that they've gotten from the Falwell generation. Those voters can be reached as well, and it has to be. But I think the message is starting to get across, and there are some candidates in the South who were running mostly on economic populist issues and winning.
Tom, do you have a disagreement with that?
Well, the one thing I would disagree with is people are extrapolating. I don't know that Bob is doing it so much, but people are extrapolating a lot from a couple of things. One is the two races that two of the races, not the only two, that were won in the South in the U.S. House in the 2006 regular general election, one of which was in DeLay's seat and one of which was in the Foley seat. And those were both extraordinarily favorable situations because both men were in serious legal trouble and both of the Republicans were write-ins. The second is these two special elections, the Kazuyu win and the Childress win, And I just did a forum for Salon, who I write for, where I host and moderate. And I didn't prompt the experts at all from the Hotline and from the Cook Political Report and Stu Rothenberg from the Rothenberg Political Report, and said, where might some Democrats lose? Because this is supposed to be another good cycle for the Democrats. Excuse me. And without prompting, they said, I think, you know, they'll probably lose two of those four seats, the Foley and DeLay and these two special election seats. So I feel like some Southern Democrats are sort of dancing in the end zone before, you know, the referees have put their arms up to declare it a touchdown yet. And I think, you know, I just don't think there'll be big gains in the South, just like there wasn't big gains in 2006. Now, on the other hand, my other counterpoint here with Bob on some of these Southern Democrats is, look, let me be very clear that I would much rather have Heath Shuler, even if he votes to give immunity, say, to the telecommunications company, something Bob and I would both, I'm sure, agree in disagreeing with some of these Southern Blue Dog Democrats. I'd rather have his vote, even if he votes that way, because you still got to vote for Nancy Pelosi. That's better than having a Republican. But let's be clear, having these Democrats in the coalition sometimes compromises the Democratic coalition. And I would prefer, if you had to choose between having that seat and having a seat up in New York, where the Democrats have three or four seats they could pick up, Jim Walsh is retiring, and you'd like to have both. But if I had to pick, I'd rather have the New York seat than the North Carolina seat, because it's going to change the coalition.
Bob, rather have New York, North Carolina?
Well, I understand that argument, and I agree with Tom about about certain things that the Blue Dogs are doing and how that's weakening the party. I would say, though, that I think that partly because of the Democrats' withdrawal from the South in a large part over the last few decades, they haven't been competing in presidential elections, and they had not, until Howard Dean came along, been investing in state parties and in grassroots organizing in the South. And I think that that has helped to create a more conservative political environment, simply from the lack of argument at the time when people are paying the most attention to the elections. Last year, in the last election, only Florida got basically any money, any staff, any advertisements at all from the Democrats. And so there's been sort of – Republicans have sort of been talking in an echo chamber, and I think it has moved Southern politics artificially in some ways to the right. And I think that Democrats now being reengaged in the South, there is a process where the parties in the South and Democrats in the South begin to merge with the more progressive side of the Democratic Party. And I think that's starting to happen, but it is going to be a long process.
A couple more questions here, then we'll all go about your busy days here. So I'm going to talk about the Jim Webb factor here for a minute. I mean, he's a guy who was a Marine, former Republican, but has come out as a senator as one of the most powerful economic populist voices in the U.S. Senate. One of the reasons he's had a hard time with Barack Obama is because he's an economic populist and is really pushing that. And he's no kind of left progressive from New York City. He's a Scotch-Irish boy who was in the Naval Academy. So is that a force that's part of the changing voice of the South, or is this an anomaly and we just got to write this off for 10 years? We'll start with Tom Schaller and go to Bob Moser.
I mean, this is another example where the difference between what you hope for and what the reality is. And Bob and I just had a back-and-forth exchange on Salon on this, and he talks about Jim Webb a lot in the book. And Jim Webb is often held up as this model for how you win back in the South. And I think that's a fair point. But my counterpoint to that is very simple. Jim Webb is an extraordinarily exceptional candidate, as you pointed out. He's a former Republican. He's a former Marine with Vietnam experience. His son is in the war. He's Scotch-Irish. So he's like, if you had to go to Steven Spielberg and the DreamWorks team and say, draw me up a Senate candidate. Oh, and by the way, can you invent a macaca moment, which becomes the most destructive moment in political history? Can you do that too? Now, if Bob said to me, I got 500 Jim Webbs lined up and I got 500 macaca moments on tape, I'd say, okay, let's send some money down in the South. But, I mean, I just think the planets were so perfectly aligned. 2006 was the best Democratic cycle since 1974 in the midterm races, maybe since 1954, and on election night we still didn't know for sure that he won. He squeaked past. I mean, when the write-ins came in, it was a little wider margin than we thought on election night. But this was no clear victory against a guy who was self-destructing live on television for about 2 months, and the perfect former Republican Marine with a son in Iraq, Scotch-Irish candidate, and he still squeaked across the finish line in the most blueifying state in the South, Virginia, which has got all these Democratic advantages. So this is like to use a Maryland metaphor for you, Mark, this is like the Maryland Terps beating the Silver Spring High School boys team by three. I mean, come on.
Bob, what do you say to that?
Well, I can't argue with that too much. Webb certainly had a lot of advantages in that race, but I would point out he was running against somebody who was extraordinarily popular in Virginia, and actually is pretty popular now again. But I think that Webb. The interesting thing about Webb is that he did win without doing a lot of the. A lot of the stuff that we're used to from Southerners trying to win as Democrats. You know, he did not he didn't have that kind of rector moment. He didn't have the sister soldier moment. He was pro-choice. He opposed the anti-gay marriage amendment that was on the ballot that year, which Republicans tried to use against him. And he was a strong anti-war candidate. And you know, I think that those factors do say something about how Virginia and how the South is beginning to change.
Is there something, the last 2 points here, is there something fundamentally different about what appears to be happening on some levels in the West with people like Brian Schweitzer and others winning in Montana and the votes in Wyoming growing and places like that, and what's happening in the South? Where when you heard Brian Schweitzer, the governor's speech, I mean, this was a speech from the gut out. Like, he had no notes. He was just ringing it out, you know. Daddy didn't go to college. Moved by Kennedy. He was amazing. And so you want to have a beer and hang out at the pickup with him and enjoy yourself after it was all over. So what's the difference between that and what's going on in the South? Why does it seem to be a fundamental difference here between the economic populism that goes in the West and goes in the South? Tom and then Bob.
Well, I mean, this is one of the things I talk about in the book. Is I went through the National Annenberg Election Study from 2000, I think, and I looked at where Southerners are on social issues after you take guns off the table, because you still have to be pro-Second Amendment. And Schweitzer is, in fact, his very first ad when he ran for governor. He called his consultant at 4 in the morning and said, "You better get that damn gun ad up tomorrow or you're fired," right? So once you take guns off the table, one of the arguments I make in Whistling Past Dixie, as Bob knows, is let's look at where Westerners and Midwesterners are compared to Southerners on other social issues. And sometimes the margins are only very small. But on issues of choice, on issues of gay marriage, on issues of prayer in school, Westerners, because of that libertarian tradition, are more liberal, or more, at least more libertarian. So my argument is, you take guns off the table in the South, somebody's going to say, hold on a second, where are you on stem cell research or abortion or gay rights? You take guns off the table, and there'll be some Westerners who will stop you too, but there'll be fewer in number, and so you have a better chance of electing Brian Schweitzer or somebody like him in Montana than you do in Mississippi. And so my point is, when you have scarce resources and you got to pick between those two races, I say go West, and look what's happening. It is happening out West.
Bob?
Well, I think that actually the formula is very similar, and what we would like to see in the South is a Brian Schweitzer. That's what we need, actually. And Jim Webb has not really turned into that kind of figure who sets the tone for Southern politics, or a new tone for it. And the tone has still been set by Bill Clinton, and that's the way that Southern Democrats still believe that they can win. I think that one of the words that I heard the most when I was out reporting and talking to grassroots Democrats in the South was gutless. The Democrats have just been gutless down here. And I think that's absolutely true. You know, I think that one of the encouraging things that we're seeing with the Obama campaign and his adaptation of the 50-state strategy of Howard Dean is that Obama doesn't see the South as a uniquely racist or different place. He seems to view the South as part of America. And I think that's what Southerners have been waiting for Democrats to do for a long time. It's a hard road. And I agree that on social issues, definitely out West, the Democrats do have an edge. I think in the South that there is a very strong, especially economic populist tradition. And if you can bring that together, turn it into a values message, and basically turn around in some ways the advantage that Republicans have had by casting their policies as moral policies. Democrats obviously are motivated by moral policies as well, but they haven't phrased it that way. And you have to do that in the South. That is one big difference between the West and the South.
And finally here, as we talk about Dixie, historically, the Dixiecrats became Republicans. And Kevin Phillips, in his prescient book, said this was going to happen, and the Republicans were going to make a new majority in the South, and it has happened. So I make both your scenarios, but what's going to happen in the future, given that, you know, that race is a huge factor in the South. I mean, it was the Confederacy, it's where the slaves were held. There's lots of lingering stuff from that even now. And you can feel as far north as Maryland, and just the upper south as far as I'm concerned. And so, race is a factor in all this. So give us your scenarios of where you think the South is going to go and why and when. And we'll start with Bob Moser and then with Tom Schottel this time.
Well, I think that over the next 20 years, you're going to see, obviously, continued erosion of the power of the white vote and the ability of whites to vote in a block and to carry states in the South. That's hugely significant. What we don't know at this point is how Hispanic voters in the South, who are going to be the major swing vote in the region, are going to vote. They voted Republican last time by a small majority. They voted Democratic, obviously, in 2006 by a pretty strong majority, and they're looking like that this year. I think that a lot of what we're going to see depends on how engaged the Democrats remain in the South. If they continue to be in the South registering voters, working on turnout, and crafting a message that works there and opposing the Republican message, which I think is going to become stronger. There's going to be more cultural populism coming from the Republicans over the next 20 years, precisely because they are going to be losing ground, and because they're going to have to try to divide and win even larger blocks of white voters. The Democrats have to be there to counter it, but I think that they can successfully do that, and I think that in 20 years the South politically is going to be a completely different place.
Tom?
I agree. Actually, I say all the time in public forums that the South is less distinct as a region than it was 30 years ago, and it'll be even less distinct 30 years from now. There'll still always be some differences, but I think we're homogenizing as a country because of some of the trends Bob talks about. People are very mobile. They have multiple job careers, and they move to different parts of the country. Their children don't necessarily stay in their hometowns. And the places where the Democrats are doing well tend to be places that have been repopulated by, whether it's Hispanic immigrants or people who've moved to the Research Triangle in North Carolina or Northern Virginia, which helped carry Jim Webb and his Asian wife. That Northern Virginia counties are 15% Asian now, right? As Chuck Todd likes to say on MSNBC, he says, you know, the Virginia is seceding from the Confederacy just a little late, you know, and this is what's happening. So, I mean, the main crux of the difference in mine and Bob's argument is really a matter of speed. It's a matter of pace. I say, look, do you want your majority now, or do you want to wait 30 years to build your majority? And if you want to build your majority now, you're going to have to figure out a way to do it without the South, govern effectively, then take your case to the South. And the only caveat I say about that is that, you know, Democrats in a non-Southern majority elected Bill Clinton and Al Gore, two Southern sons. Bill Clinton and Al Gore both got more than 270 non-Southern electoral votes. And Bill Clinton and Al Gore both did better in the non-Southern states than the 11 Southern states. They governed effectively. The country was happy. Bill Clinton was at 60%. And guess what happened? The South went 11-for-11 states against Al Gore, including his home state of Tennessee. So my fear is that the Democrats tried this. They trusted two Southern senators to lead them to the White House and to lead them to peace and prosperity, and the South still rejected them. So I just think Bob may say 20 years, I may say 30 years, and I just say to Democrats, do you want your majority now, or do you want it in another generation? And if you want it now, you better figure out a different calculus.
Tom Schottel, whose book, Dixie, Whistling Past Dixie, and Bob Moser's book, Blue Dixie, thank you so much for joining us here in Denver today. It's been a fascinating conversation. Thanks.